anybody can dance. We're all dancers. I think that the aim of enhancing brain function and enhancing the way we think and feel through joyful movement is a aim for all human beings.
From the offices of the Weill Cornell Medicine Brain and Spine Center in New York City, this is Your Brain with Dr. Phil Stieg. Internationally renowned scientist and researcher, Dr. Phil Stieg is neurosurgeon-in-chief of the New York Presbyterian Weill Cornell Medical Center. This week, Dr. Stieg and his guest explore dancing in your head.
Hello, I'd like to welcome Dr. Julia Basso, director of the Embodied Brain Laboratory at Virginia Tech. She is also a trained improvisational dancer. Today, we are going to focus on the body-brain connection and how the body, through dance, optimizes brain function. Let's also learn how dance may be used to treat autism or learning and memory disorders. Julia, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Just for the benefit of everybody, can you define what do we actually mean when we talk about dance?
Sure. So anybody can dance. We're all dancers. It is kind of this inherent ability that we see starting around 6 months of age that people can entrain and intune to rhythmic patterns of music. Dance has primarily been defined from this Eurocentric perspective, but really I'm a proponent of the idea that dance is a human behavior. And just recently in some work that I did, a paper called Dance on the Brain, and I generated a new definition for dance, specifically that dance encompasses an unlimited array of movement patterns, either spontaneously or intentionally generated, manifested for the purpose of ritual, performance, or social interactions, and engage a diverse network of brain regions that support neurobehavioral processes.
I think we all would agree that exercise in general is good for the brain. What made you choose dance, and in particular, improvisational dance?
Exercise has so many benefits for the brain, especially kind of at the core, producing new neurons, for example. And so knowing that exercise does that just from kind of this cardiopulmonary perspective, dance goes above and beyond the cardiopulmonary aspects. And it has a variety of different aspects, including socio-emotional components, rhythmic components, creative components. There's these generative effect of dance where we create movement anew. And that's kind of where improvisation comes into play, that we're using our body, our sensory motor components to drive new ideas, new movement materials. And so we do this through the practice of improvisation.
So I'm curious how this all got going. I know that you got your Bachelor of Arts in dance, and then you went and got your PhD in neuroscience. Was this sort of a wedding of those two passions, or was there some moment in your life where all of a sudden the light went on and said, wait a minute, dance is really important to the way my brain or somebody else's brain is functioning?
Sure. So I went to Middlebury College, and I double majored in dance and neuroscience while I was there. And early on in my academic life, I really started intertwining these two things. The training there was very much about understanding the body and the peripheral nervous system as an integral part of the nervous system as a whole. And then dove into my PhD and studied the neural mechanisms underlying the motivation for physical activity. So was really working in an animal rodent laboratory and studying those aspects of the brain. I always knew I wanted to get back to working with humans and to really studying the effects of physical activity on brain function and physiology. And so I then went to NYU and worked with Wendy Suzuki, where we started looking at the effects of physical activity in humans on how we think and feel. And now starting my own lab, the Embodied Brain Lab, I've really gotten into the idea of using dance as this interventional tool to enhance brain function and physiology, specifically because dance is this multimodal form of physical activity.
In the paper that you wrote, Dance on the Brain, you talk about this concept of synchronicity. There's both intra, meaning within the brain, or interbrain synchronicity. Explain what that means to us.
One of the things about dance, of course, when we're dancing together, what's happening between two people as they're moving together, engaging in these rhythms, these oscillatory patterns of brain activity, they start to synchronize. This is something that happens very much early in neurodevelopmental patterns of behavior. So when mom and baby, for example, they start to interact, brain rhythms start to become synchronous. That means they correlate, they relate to one another. This is how we learn to understand one another. We do this at a very young age through these sensory motor experiences, like, for example, looking, gazing into the eyes, or cooing at your baby. The sensory motor connection that develops then kind of gets embedded as this socio-emotional understanding that, oh, somebody else understands me. If I cry, if I express an emotion, a parent or caretaker is there to be there and understand. And so that's exactly what we're training for in dance. We practice something called mirroring, where, for example, if I would start as the leader and you would follow me as much as you can in the same movement patterns that I do. And then what happens is that the brain patterns start to become similar. Because why? Because we're doing the same thing. So that's interbrain synchrony between one another. Intrabrain synchrony kind of speaks to this idea of communication within the brain. Optimal patterns of brain activity that allow communication within the brain and between brain centers, whether it be sensory motor or between emotional centers and learning and memory centers. So brain areas communicate with one another. Why? Because they're anatomically connected to one another. They're actually sending signals to each other, these different regions of the brain, but we can actually engage in particular things, in this instance, dance, to enhance the flow of information within the brain.
For me, reading your materials, when you talk about how movement is important in the brain development, then I was wondering, when you're talking about children, you know, rolling over from supine to prone, sitting up, then starting crawling and then walking. Is it more that the brain develops first and then you develop the ability to move and do things? Which is first, the chicken or the egg?
I think that's a good question. I think it probably happens in tandem, and that the more sensory motor behaviors that one can engage in, and even if the caretaker can help engage the child, that engagement and kind of back and forth of the parent-child interaction is very important, and then helps spurs brain growth and development, and then back and forth. Very early on in utero, as the fetus starting to move and develop, the movement of the fetus actually spurs on this cortical activity, which then further spurs on movement and so forth.
I thought you suggested that a child's ability to respond to rhythm at an earlier age is somewhat suggestive of their brain development in a positive way.
Sure. The more we dance and move, one of the biggest findings is that the white matter tracts, especially kind of in sensory motor areas, or even the corpus callosum connecting between left and right sides of the brain, are more enhanced. They're larger. There's more white matter. And what that means is that these are the axons of the brain, the areas of the neurons that actually communicate or transmit the information from one area to the next. So the more that we can use physical movement and dance to enhance those communicating structures, then the better off neurodevelopment is going to be. This kind of relates to learning and memory abilities. It relates to socio-emotional behaviors. It relates to a whole variety of things. So it's important to get individuals engaging in physical activity and dance early on in their lives. The more individuals engage in physical activity at these younger stages in life, it predicts physical activity later in life. So if you're a person who is involved in dance early on, you're more likely to continue out through your lifelong practice. It's important because as we age, kind of around the middle age years, 45, 60 and up, the brain can start to deteriorate. There have been studies showing that individuals who are more fit either have a higher level of cardiopulmonary fitness, or kind of engage in a lifelong practice of physical activity, their brain matter is more robust in these later years. There's less deterioration because the brain is plastic. We're able to change it.
So thinking about the way one studies the brain, I was trying to understand how you actually go about doing this. You can't put an MRI scan around somebody's brain while they're dancing. I presume you talk a little bit about doing electrical measurements, EEG measurements in the brain. I think that would be hard to do with all the motion going on. So how are you really looking at this so that you can get the data that you are getting?
We're really trying to capture the brain in motion, and that's something I talk about in my paper, that it is difficult. A lot of brain imaging happens while we're still, while we're laying down, for example, in the MRI or functional magnetic resonance imaging. In this instance, we can actually have individuals moving around, in this case dancing, while they're wearing the electroencephalography cap. All the equipment kind of goes on a backpack. It's really quite amazing. We just had Little Buck and his Memphis Juke and Company here.
So next, I think we'll do some improvisation.
You want everybody just freestyling, or you want like the battle mode, or you want like just me and Surf?
We had Little Buck performing, doing the Memphis Jukin, which is this kind of improvisational form of dance out of Memphis, Tennessee, that is kind of described as the ballet of hip hop. A lot of flow and footwork, intricate movement patterns. It was amazing. It was one of the most exciting scientific days of my career. They were moving, they were doing all kinds of movements, and we were able to record pretty sound EEG data, which was really exciting.
But in addition to that, I gather that you can also have a dancer sit in an MRI machine and imagine dancing or visualize dancing, and then look at those brains that are activated. And are those similar to what you see when somebody's actively dancing?
Yeah, so that's some of the kind of exciting work that had come out. People had the idea, because you couldn't image a moving brain, so what about imaging a still brain while people watch dance? And so this is where the idea of this action observation network, or mirror neuron system, came about. So when dancers watch movement, what ends up happening is that the brain activity, this action observation network, becomes active. So what ends up happening is that when an individual watches dance or watches a movement form, the same brain areas are lighting up as the actual mover themselves. And if you're more trained at a particular thing, say, for example, a ballerina watching another ballerina or ballet dancer moving through space, and that the body knows that movement inherently, those areas are going to light up in an even stronger way, a more powerful way. This is another idea of this kind of interbrain synchrony and knowing what the other is doing. And as dancers too, we know that when I watch dance, I'm in my head, I'm in the choreography, I can feel it in my body.
You're in the zone.
Yeah, you're in the zone, and you're enjoying that experience of watching another dance and wanting to do it, wanting to be on stage, because those same brain areas are lighting up.
Do you envision applying this to other things, say like basketball, and looking at whether basketball is better for the brain or what different effects it has on the brain than dance?
Sure. I mean, I think it's a really interesting idea, especially when it comes to team sports. And so you would imagine, especially in professional athletes who are so in tune with their partners on the basketball court or are in the baseball stadium, that you need to be in tune with the other members on that team, because you need to know what they're going to be doing. This whole thing is a little bit about planning and understanding, knowing what that person is going to do in advance. It helps us, right? If we can know and understand what others are going to do in the future, then we can better prepare ourselves for our own actions. It helps us to become part of the social cohort. So there's really an evolutionary tag to it. We need to understand what others are doing and what others are going to do in the future so that we can plan for our own actions.
Studies have shown that programs for people with movement disorders, which combine social engagement with group exercise, even sports like boxing, can be beneficial.
Sitting tall, 7 and 8, going in 1, 2, palms together on 4,
These are not typical dance students. The class you are listening to is part of a program designed for people with Parkinson's disease.
Elbows widening, hands sliding down, eyes lowering, focusing.
This program is called Dance for PD and has been running at the Mark Morris Dance Center in Brooklyn, New York, since 2001. David Leventhal directs the program.
When we started 20 years ago, we had no idea whether dance would be accessible or appropriate to people with Parkinson's. But things that people with Parkinson's struggle with are addressed head-on in dance. The idea was, let's take professional dancers, put them in the same room with people living with Parkinson's, and see what happens. I taught the first class, and I saw people who came into the room struggling with walking, struggling with rigidity, struggling with their balance, struggling with things like facial expression, all aspects of movement. Even in the course of the first 20 minutes of class, I saw transformation happen. I saw people moving with more fluidity. And I saw people dancing with each other and connecting with each other. People who may have been experiencing quite a bit of social isolation in their lives, coming together and finding a connection non-verbally. Just being able to look at someone's eyes and dance with them, to mirror their movements, to do something meaningful together as a community.
My hands are so stiff I can't straighten my hand out. You know, just start moving gently and all of that stiffness goes away.
There is something magical that takes place in there. I'm not sitting there thinking about my body. I'm just trying to move.
At first, didn't want to do it because I thought I'd be associating with a lot of people at a stage of Parkinson's that I didn't want to be at, and that would be discouraging to me. But I finally went, and I've never regretted the decision.
We start class in a circle. So everyone is dancing together, everyone is equal, and we're all sort of mirroring each other. Some people need to go a little slower, some people choose to do only certain movements, but there is a sense of a unified body moving together, and everybody is in training to the circular community. This class is not about Parkinson's. This class is about dance and music and community. In this class, people are given an opportunity to shed their Parkinson's persona and to really think of themselves as dancers.
Listeners of This Is Your Brain can now sign up for our new email newsletter. Get advance notice of future episodes, as well as access to fascinating bonus material from past episodes exclusive to newsletter subscribers. Sign up today at thisisyourbrain.com.
I'm completely intrigued by your concept of dance therapy, and you suggest that it's going to be beneficial for the autistic spectrum. Do you have a specific example of where dance therapy has been used for an autistic child or adult and had a positive result?
Yeah, there have been a few studies, and there was a recent meta-analysis that I think looked around 6 or so studies that did find a significant positive effect, especially on the social emotional skills, kind of the social skill impairments that are prominent in individuals with autism spectrum disorder. Dance and dance movement therapy can help to enhance the ability to communicate with others, especially the ability to engage in eye contact, the ability to engage in vocal communication, and the ability to engage in mirroring or tracking others.
It seems dance therapy may also be beneficial during depression, and people have used it during COVID as a way to minimize the sense of isolation.
Yeah, that's one of the most prominent things. It's been used for depression and anxiety disorders, kind of lifting people's moods in general. We ran a study during COVID because everybody was isolated in their homes. We ran a study online where we brought people together and had them dance together online. So we called it Moving Online Together. And what we found was that even a single session of online dance 60 minutes in time, enhanced positive affect, so it decreased depression and decreased negative mood states, and increased self-esteem and positive affect. And not only that, but it enhanced social connectivity or the feeling of being in community with one another. When we looked at those relationships, what we found was those individuals who actually experienced greater increases in self-esteem or greater decreases in negative affect showed the biggest gains in the social connectivity. So we were very excited about that because it really shows this socio-emotional connection and what I called kind of the body-mind community connection.
Can you have that social community sense, even though you and I are sitting here on this Zoom, can that sense be transmitted across electronically?
Apparently so. We were surprised. Normally we're in a dance studio being together and then you can engage in that sense of touch. When you're dancing together online, right, there's a lot of things that are missing, but we were able to choreograph together online. I was teaching improvisation online. We were able to mirror one another over the screen. So we could do a lot of different things.
I would hope that every human listening to this has had that moment where, you know, something goes on, some song that they love and their body just starts to move. You know, there's a whole era that loved Thriller,
yes.
You know, Michael Jackson, and their bodies, you'd be standing there talking and all of a sudden they'd start moving, you know. What's going on there?
Sure. So, and this is a bit of the idea of entrainment too. So, of course, sound travels in waves. When those sound waves hit the ear, they get transmitted basically into our auditory cortices, which are in our temporal lobes, right, and underneath the ear. The ear decodes all of this information such that it breaks down the rhythm. The brain can pick up on these sound rhythms and we end up hearing the sound. The brain entrains to the rhythms of the sound. So the brain starts gyrating, getting into this rhythmic movement. That then, from the auditory cortex, is transferred to more sensory motor cortices. These sensory motor cortices start gyrating in the same way, and then subsequently it goes out through the spinal cord and into our body, and we can then move. So there's this entrainment of rhythm that happens in this very specific way through, you know, these brain processes and transfer of information. And that's what's happening as we kind of entrain to the rhythms of the music. In a commercialized way, people have started to try to find like alpha rhythms or theta rhythm movement, beta beats and so forth, these binaural beats that people have tried to entrain the brain in these particular rhythmic frequencies to induce calm states of mind or things like this. Yeah.
Just as long as it isn't music, you know. And finally, where do you plan on going with all this? 10 years from now, when you've reached your goal, what does the future hold for you and for this dance on the brain theory?
From here, I want to start building out and developing more programs, allowing different populations of individuals to dance, individuals with depression or anxiety disorders, using this for different clinical populations, and also basically just to study the basic science of how dance affects the brain. I think it's a really fantastic tool to help in a variety of different clinical populations, but also just with healthy populations. I think that the aim of enhancing brain function and enhancing the way we think and feel through joyful movement is a aim for all human beings. So I'm really excited about this idea of studying the body-mind connection, how we can use the body to optimize brain function and physiology. And ideally, me and my partner, Rachel Rue, who kind of runs a lot of the dance curriculum right here in Blacksburg, Virginia, we hope to develop a institute for body-mind movement for both healthy and clinical populations. And so we're starting to apply for some National Endowment of the Arts Research Labs grants and other grants to support that and really bring dance to the world in kind of this fun, unique way where we're focusing on dance for health and wellness.
Well, good luck. I mean, you have the advantage of being able to get support from both the art world and also the basic science world, so you've covered your bases very well.
Yeah.
Julia, it's been delightful getting to spend this time with you. I think that you have highlighted how important physical activity and, more importantly, how important dance is and the importance that it plays in our motor, sensory, cognitive, social, emotional, rhythmic, and creative skills. People will walk away from this feeling much more positive about the role of dance in our society. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
This Is Your Brain with Dr. Phil Stieg is produced for the Weill Cornell Brain and Spine Center by the Really Interesting Picture Company. Episode producers are Gerilyn Abinader and Hildy Rubin. The series is directed and edited by Tom Veltri with music by Lenny Williams. The announcer is Allison Power. Please sign up for our newsletter and get access to special episode-related bonus content at thisisyourbrain.com and follow us on Facebook at This Is Your Brain.